Manny Pacheco, and we're traveling through forgotten Hollywood. I've written an award-winning book series I'd like you to purchase and read, sharing America's story through actors from Hollywood's golden age. Today we have a very special guest. Hugh O'Brien is a noted actor, and he appeared on screen, stage, and television. He's best known for his role as a famous gunslinger in The Life and Times of Wyatt Earp. O'Brien is also famous for his humanitarian efforts through his created Hobie Foundation. And now he has written his memoirs entitled Hugh O'Brien or What's Left of Him. Welcome, Hugh. How are you?
89 and acting and doing what I did when I was 29.
You have a fabulous book. I had the chance to read it over the past couple of weeks, and it is like sitting with you in an easy chair, and you're telling us your life story from your early childhood to your days in the service and into your career, and then, of course, with your foundation. Let's begin with your early childhood. Your father was traveled around the country and was a member of the Marine Corps?
Well, he was a Marine, and my grandfather was a Marine, and my great-grandfather before that was also a Marine. They were in the Marine Corps, not as a career, but because of engagements that were going on. I enlisted when I was 17 because of World War II, and I went through boot camp in San Diego, and right out of boot camp, age 17, they made me a drill instructor. So I'm very proud to be the youngest drill instructor in the history of the Marine Corps, but I'm now also the oldest one that's living.
While you were in the Marine Corps, you had an opportunity to meet some stars. Actually, I read in your book that you were actually boxing and that John Wayne was the a referee.
He refereed my first fight in the Marine Corps, and that was quite a fantastic fun event, even though it's, you know, boxing sounds like it's a hardcore, but anyway, in the Marine Corps on Friday nights, it turned out that John Wayne, he was introduced, and he came in the ring to referee the fight. He had been making a film down there in Dago, and he loved the Marine Corps, so he volunteered to come over and referee, you know, the fight. And he climbed into the ring, and bottom line is that he looked at me and he looked at the other guy who was about a good 8 inches taller than I was and about 75 pounds or 100 pounds more. I was about 160 pounds back then, 6 feet. This guy was about 250 pounds, and he was about 6'8". He was a very big guy. And Wayne looked at him, and he looked at me, and he figured out the only way this kid is going to have a chance at this giant is that if there were no rules. So he introduced this, and he said, "Okay, I'm going to get out of the ring, guys, and you just, we're not going to have any rounds. You guys go to it." And he climbed out of the ring. We had no referee. And we fought for about, solid for about 9-10 minutes without any round. And he finally was so exhausted, I poked him in the nose, whatever, the left jab, and he went down, collapsed and went down, and I won the fight. So that was, and he never forgot, Wayne never forgot that story. He used to tell it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did the film, The Shootist, he just couldn't believe that it was the same guy, and wow, and he just loved to tell that story.
It's a great story, too. Yeah,
The Shootist is one of the best films that John Wayne ever met, and you can imagine what it meant for me to be on the same film with him.
Let's take a brief moment from the conversation to hear a couple of tunes from scores of motion pictures that starred John Wayne in Harm's Way and The Shootist, and featuring Hugh O'Brien on Forgotten Hollywood. Thank you. Welcome back to Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco with our special guest, Hugh O'Brien. Now, while you were on leave in the service, you also had a chance to have a date with Virginia Mayo?
Well, Virginia Mayo, Katharine Hepburn, Marilyn Monroe. I had the opportunity to meet them all, and I had the fun of dating them. And one of the things which was so much fun for me is that after I got out of the Marine Corps, I came up here to Los Angeles and had little cards made up, business cards, that said exterior decorator on them, which meant that I mowed lawns. And I had most of the yards in the Beverly Hills and West Los Angeles area. And I finally wound up having about six or seven, eight guys working for me. Had a few extra bucks, and that it kept me going pretty damn well. So I was very happy to do that, whatever it took.
And now, back to Forgotten Hollywood.
Tropical heat wave. The temperature's rising. It isn't surprising. She certainly can. Starting a heat wave. Call that nurse heat wave. In such a way that the customers say that she certainly can. G. Her anatomy makes the mercury jump.
293.
Heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The way that she moves that thermometer proves that she certainly can.
What's your name, honey?
Pablo.
Certainly can.
Chico.
Certainly can.
Miguelito.
Pablo. Chico. Miguelito.
Weather report. It say a front of warm air is moving in from
where?
Jamaica. Moderately high barometric pressure will cover the northeast and the deep south. Small danger of
what?
Fruit frost. Hot and humid nights can be expected.
St. Vincent 95. Guadeloupe 97. San Domingo 99. Martinique. 105.
Having a heat wave. A tropical heat wave. Temperature's rising. It isn't surprising. You certainly can. Can. I started this heat wave. Bye. Such a way that the customers say that I certainly can.
Can.
Anatomy makes the mercury rise to 93. Tropical, tropical heat wave. The way that I move, that thermometer proves.
She certainly can.
I certainly, certainly, certainly can.
business like show business like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they've hung a star. Let's go on with the show. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down, the headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town, the opening when your heart beats like a drum, the closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like show business, like no business I know. You get word before the show has started favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your partner I have parted. You're broken-hearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go.
Ethel Merman and Marilyn Monroe, who starred with Hugh O'Brien in There's No Business Like Show Business back in the early 1950s on Forgotten Hollywood. One of the things that I really got out of your wonderful book was that the Marine Corps taught you discipline and preparation, and that became very, very important in your film career, especially in your first audition when you met Ida Lupino.
Yes, it did. I helped make that meeting possible by, I did, one of the things I did was to mow as many lawns as I could in the so-called Sunset Strip area, and one of the people that I took care of was Ida Lupino's lawn and my agent's lawn, and one way or the other, she auditioned me, and I had spent, I guess, maybe three nights before, a total of about 40, 50 hours reading and memorizing the whole script because I had no way of knowing which scene she would do. Anyway, when it came time for the audition, which was in her home, she sat me down on this sofa and she handed me the script and she told me, she said, let me tell you what it's all about. And she told me in about 15, 20, 30 minutes, you know, what the version was of her book. And she handed me the script, and I took the script, and I looked at the scene, which I knew backwards and forwards, and she read the lady's part, and I did the man's part, but I did it without the script. In other words, looking direct at her. When we finished, she said, my God, oh, wow, that's the best cold reading I've ever heard. And then I told her that I had memorized everything. And she said, well, I'll tell you, you like your attitude, you're prepared, you know that it's it takes an extra mile in this business, and the more you can do like that, the better you're going to make out. You got the role. And she directed the first film. The first film I ever did, which was called Never Fear.
when you transitioned from film to television, you became a real pioneer of what they call the adult Western, which what Gunsmoke became, what Bonanza became. But really, it's because of the preparation you did in the life and times, life and legend of Wyatt Earp, that because you really created a character that was very much like the real Wyatt Earp. Can you talk about that a little bit?
He was a very fascinating character in many ways. First of all, he was well educated, and he wound up in the business of being a U.S. Marshal because of his background, and they hired him to be the Marshal of Dodge and then over to Ellsworth, Kansas, then Dodge, and then in Tombstone. And he handled all of those extremely well. But he was a colorful character in many ways. He wore that kind of an outfit that I picked out to wear. And there's a story there. They sent me to Western Costume after I got the role. And they had this wardrobe picked out, and I wore, they had a polka dot shirt and a white cowboy, real cowboy looking hat. And they said, "Boy, that's not what they wore." And so one way or the other, they let me pick out what I felt would work. And that's the outfit that I wore in the Wyatt Earp series. And one of the things that people remembered about it and liked about it was that the wardrobe in that show was authentic. Nobody wore the polka dot shirt.
Let's take this special opportunity to hear our guest, Hugh O'Brien, croon his theme song from his hit television show, Unforgotten Hollywood.
Hold it, stranger. I'll tell you a story, a real true life story, a tale of the Western frontier. The West, it was lawless, but one man was flawless, and his is the story you'll hear. Wyatt Earp, Wyatt Earp, brave, courageous, and bold. Long live his fame, and long live his glory, and long may his story be told. When I came to Kansas to settle in Kansas, I planned on a peaceable life. Some goods and some chattel, a few head of cattle, a home and a sweet loving wife. Now I wasn't partial to being a marshal, but fate went and dealt me a hand. While outlaws were looting and killing and shooting, I knew that I must take a stand.
Oh, Wyatt Earp, Wyatt Earp, brave, courageous, and bold. Long live his fame, and long live his glory, and long may his story be told. Well, he cleaned up the country, the old Wild West country. He made law and order prevail, and none can deny it, the legend of Wyatt forever will live on the trail.
Welcome back to Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco with our special guest, Hugh O'Brien. you actually did a lot of your stunts, but that the stunt folks would set up the stunts, and then you would make sure they got all the credit they deserved, but well, then you would perform the stunts.
I wanted to make sure they got paid.
Right, right.
If I had done the choreography and then did the stunt, they wouldn't have gotten paid. So I had a very wonderful relationship with the stuntmen, and we had a key person with us all the time.
We'll return with more wonderful stories from Hugh O'Brien. Manny Pacheco here. Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History, and Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History shares Americana through the eyes of actors who appear under the titles of such iconic movies, such as The Wizard of Oz.
That's a horse of a different color. Come on in.
Casablanca.
I'm shocked, to find that gambling is going on in here.
And It's a Wonderful Life.
A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History was recently a 2013 gold medal recipient from the Reader's Favorite Book Awards, complete with a star-studded ceremony in Miami. You can purchase the entire Forgotten Hollywood book series on Amazon and at independent bookstores, and you can download the first paperback to your virtual library as an ebook for your Kindle, Nook, or on your favorite e-reader through Apple. The Forgotten Hollywood book series is a perfect gift. I invite you to visit ForgottenHollywood.com and pick up a copy of these books today.
Hi, I'm the Pink Lady, and you're listening to Forgotten Hollywood.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. Angels cheer, cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
a song and a dance, a chance for fun. I said love has many faces, and I mean to kiss everyone. I always used to say I'll take the bouquet, not just one rose. Survey the field, I told my fickle heart, remember love has many faces. Play the field, I told my fickle heart, remember love comes and goes. That's how it used to be, till you smiled at me, and then I knew that not any of the many faces was love, till I looked at you, till I looked at you.
Well, we're speaking with Hugh O'Brien. This is Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco. And let me tell you, one of the things that I did enjoy reading after you concluded your television series, how much you got to travel in some of the motion pictures you did. Come Fly With Me, Love Has Many Faces. I mean, you really had a chance to see the world by being in the productions of really wonderful films.
That attitude and that interest on my part was not universal. There were many so-called stars and people that when they would go to London, they'd sit in their suite all night long getting bombed or whatever. But any city, any place I'd been in the world, the Orient, I really care a lot and enjoy learning about that part of the world and the citizens that make it possible. And there are so many different varieties of life out there, and I find that an extra pay for the salary. You really, you know, it's above and beyond what you can buy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see it as many people in Dodge City August 1-3, and it might be able to get there. Let me just say one other thing, because I know you got to go, right?
No, we're doing fine.
There is a couple of films that I did, which I think, well, they show you my interests, but they also show you my willingness and desire and enjoyment in working with the animals of that country. Africa Texas Style is one film. Another one I did was Cowboy in Africa. And I really, the cowboy in Africa, he was hired, my character was hired to rope wild animals and corral them and start raising them as domestic animals, which we were very successful in doing, including one of the it was tough in one way, a couple ways, but in others it wasn't, and that is the actual roping of a wild rhinoceros. The hardest part was getting the damn thing to run straight when I was chasing him on the horse, and finally get the lasso over his head and his horns, and then the horse, you know, pulls back and stops, and the rhino bumped over, you know, over himself, and then he started to chase me, and I led the chase back into the woods, which is where I wanted them to go. And I just kept going around a group of trees, and he kept following me. And I finally roped them up and tied to the trees. And then the next part was even tougher, and that was trying to get them into the corral. But we did. And then from then on, after we got him in there, and he started getting his free food every day that he didn't have to fight for, he became very friendly. I'd go over to the corral at the and lean on the top post, and he'd come over and stick his horn underneath the top rail or middle rail, whatever, and I'd scratch his forehead below and above his eyes, and he loved it. So he became a domestic friend.
The theme from Hugh O'Brien's cult television vehicle, Search on Forgotten Hollywood.
Believe in it, it can happen.
Driving young people to do better and smarter things that make their communities a better place to be.
It really was a first step in what has turned out to be a career in public service.
You have the right and you have an obligation to yourself to find something to believe in.
Oh man, the atmosphere was definitely very, I don't know how to even say it, I want to say like magical.
It inspired me to make a positive difference.
There was a person in the fray here who was vitally important. His name was Dr. Albert Schweitzer. He was the great humanitarian of the 20th century that Hugh O'Brien had the opportunity to spend 9 days with in Lambourine, West Africa. The time that they spent, Hugh and Dr. Schweitzer, at that apex, at that special moment when Dr. Schweitzer looked at Hugh and he said, you know, Hugh, the most important thing we can do is to help young people learn how to think for themselves.
Your trips to Africa are legendary, but there was one trip in particular which absolutely changed your life, and really it's a good portion of your book. It was the trip in which you met Dr. Albert Schweitzer. Would you care to share that with us?
Well, of course. It's the main major thing that's happened in my life. Came across a lot of items and people and so forth that had been touched by Albert Schweitzer. And as it turned out, Schweitzer had written several books by that time, and he was down in Africa, and what compelled him to go down there was to treat the natives, including the lepers, and be of service to them. Now, if you can imagine that, here's a doctor who had so much to give and had, you know, a very, very profitable practice, giving up everything and going down in the middle of Africa. And I had told Norman Cousins, who was the publisher of Saturday Review of Literature, that, boy, there's a real king I'd like to meet someday. He knew Schweitzer and had a couple of stories by Schweitzer in the Saturday Review magazine. And he said, well, why don't you go over and say hello? There are no fences. I'm sure he'd be welcome. I said, yeah, sure. Try to find him in the middle of the Africa. Anyway, about 8, 10, 12 days later, I got a letter from Schweitzer invited me to come visit him. I guess Norman had obviously contacted him or whatever. It took me about 5 or 6 days to change all my schedules around. And I packed my gear and I went over. Took me 36 hours to get there. And the last flight, which was a, what they call a...
A bush flight?
Well, it is in a little...
A little small prop plane is what you're talking about.
A dirt airstrip, and when we finally came to a stop, the forest in front of us is what stopped us. And it's a good thing we weren't going any faster towards the end. But it was a short runway. Anyway, I got out, took my sea bag or whatever I had, backpack, and there was this English doctor who had come to meet me, who was there at helping Schweitzer. And he looked anything, nothing like what I expected. He had on cowboy hat, he had on a khaki shirt, khaki shorts. He looked like a big old Boy Scout. Anyway, he took me down to the Okawaga River, and we went up that river in what was what they call a pirogue, which was a cutout of a huge log and made into a canoe, like a war canoe. By the way, the map of this area is in my book, along with other things like that that show where I've been or what I've done. Anyway, I got into the pirogue, which was a, again, it was like a single paddlers, one behind another, like a war canoe, and they provided the paddle power. And they were all African, and they all were lepers. And they, their backs, I sat in the back of the canoe, which is, of the boat, which is where they put me. And every one of these men had, were lepers, and their backs were just utterly mashed with this horrible disease. But there's nothing that can be done to treat them other than to, I mean, really back them anyway. And they picked up their paddles, and we started to go upstream to Lamborghini, which is where Schweitzer's clinic was. I went in to the village, went in, they took me in to Schweitzer's little cabin, shack, if you will, and I met him and we had dinner, all of us, and then afterwards he invited me to his quarters, which of course I was thrilled to do, and that began the most exciting set of interviews and time and discussions I've ever had in my life. What an unbelievably fantastic human being he was.
And you spent, what, about 8 days with him?
I spent about 9 days there.
Okay.
And every evening, well, during the day, I would help there at the clinic, and I would also spend as much time with the lepers as I could, getting them interested in things where they could maybe make a buck or write or whatever. And then every evening I had never had less than about 3 hours with Schweitzer. Unbelievable. I was sitting at his desk with him and talking on so many different subjects. And bottom line, when it came time to go, Schweitzer took me down to the Okawaga River and stood between me and the canoe with the paddlers. And there he was with his white pith helmet, white shirt, little black bow tie, white pants, and this huge walrus mustache, white mustache. He finally reached over and took my hands in his and said, "Hugh, what are you going to do with this?" Of course, I had no idea. I don't know, sir, but I will do something about it. Anyway, he put me in the pirogue finally. We headed down the river, and every time I looked back until we went around the big curve, there he was standing on the riverbank, waving at me with that unbelievable smile of his. So that I got on the plane. It took me 36 hours to get back to L.A. By the time I got off, I had put on paper thoughts I had about starting a youth organization, which turned out to be the Hobie Program.
Which is the Hugh O'Brien Youth Leadership Program.
Right, and it's Hobie, H-O-B-Y, for short. Hobie.org is the website. The other is Hugh O'Brien, that's H-U-G-H, O'Brien, O-B-R-I-A-N, .me, all lower cap.
And you devoted much of your private time or your private life to this fabulous idea of an organization, which is really reaped many rewards in terms of seeing the children who have been involved become very important members of the United States community.
They have, and we have, I would say, a minimum of 10% or more of the top echelon, the top executives, and each of the Fortune 500 companies as an example. But the bottom line is, they're not children. These are 10th graders. They are young adults. And it's important that they begin to think as a young adult. And then pretty soon they're going to be running things. And then out of college, which I hope they go, we talk about that, they will, whatever business they get in or whatever, they will continue to want to put back in terms of the youth futures in their state, their country, their city, their village, wherever they live. And that is how and why the leadership is growing so well with that program. I just hope that you, and this would be great in order to understand it, if you would take a look at the Hobie site, there where you live.
It is a fabulous, I mean, this is a program that you should be, this is your legacy in many ways.
Well, yes, I guess so, and I'm proud of that. And what I'm really proud of is that the product, the young people that go through this program are excited to continue the program. They want to see it grow. And that is very, very special. I'm very proud of that.
Well, I can tell you right now, after reading the material and reading your book, it really left me inspired. I was absolutely inspired by your work, by your career. One of the things I want to mention, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention about your book, number one, it has forewords by Debbie Reynolds and Hugh Hefner, two lifetime friends of yours. As a matter of fact, Debbie Reynolds sang at your wedding to Virginia 8 years ago. You had your wedding at Forest Lawn?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was called A Wedding to Die For. And we held it at a mortuary.
and
the reason I told everybody that we were doing that is because of my age and so forth. And the first time I'm being married, the emotion and the nervous stuff that goes into something like that. In case something happened to me, I'd be right there at the mortuary.
I understand that Debbie Reynolds also serenaded you at the wedding. She sang It Had to Be Hugh.
Yeah, she did. It had to be Hugh. It had to be Hugh.
Let me conclude our fabulous interview with Hugh O'Brien by playing a tune sung by the wonderful Debbie Reynolds at Hugh O'Brien's wedding, this time by Betty Hutton. Join us next week for another edition of Forgotten Hollywood. And remember, let's never forget. I'm Manny Pacheco.
Why do I? just as you say. Why must I just give you your way? Why do I sigh? Why do I try to forget? It must have been that something lovers call fate kept on saying I had to wait. I saw them all, just couldn't fall till we met. It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and finally found the somebody who could make me be true, could make me feel blue, and even be glad just to be sad thinking of you. Others I've seen might never be mean, might never be cross or try to be boss, but they wouldn't do, for nobody else gave me a thrill. With all your faults, still, it had to be you, wonderful you, it had to be you. Some others I've seen might never be mean, might never be cross or try to be boss, but they wouldn't do. For nobody else gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. It had to be you.